I work in a very interesting, I have a very interesting job. And my job is about listening to problems and listening to ideas, listening to opportunities. I hardly get excited by ideas these days because I've heard a lot of them. So sometimes when people show up and they're very excited about their ideas, they're very excited about the opportunity, they think they're going to make a lot of money, they think they're going to become millionaires, I am the person who gives them a reality check. Because I tell them, you know, this business may sound exciting, but the truth is, it's actually a commodity business, and this is why. And these are the consequences, and this is why you shouldn't get involved now. Or if you're going to get involved, these are the things you have to do right now so you can solidify your position, you can enhance your competitive advantage, you can start differentiating yourself now. Or these are the relationships you need to build because you need to defend your position. So that's exactly the value of being an insider.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. I am your host, as usual, John Paul Iwoha. Today's episode is quite personal, and it promises to be very interesting. In fact, the topic is the six types of businesses I never want to do in my life. So this will be very illuminating for anybody who is about to start a business, or anybody who has started a business, or you've started a business and you're considering diversification, you're considering getting into other, you know, possible businesses. This would really help you to think through that process so that you don't commit yourself to something that you're going to regret or end up biting more than you can chew. And the reason why this topic is important is that entrepreneurs are tempted by business ideas and opportunities all the time. We find them everywhere. If you're the kind of person who is always looking out for ideas, you're caught by trends and other things like that, you can imagine that almost every time entrepreneurs are faced with one opportunity or the other that are very tempting. And sometimes people actually leave their current businesses to chase new opportunities. That's how tempting some of these things can be. The other consideration is that, you know, we all have just 24 hours in a day. So what that means is you need to be very careful what you choose to work on or who you choose to work with. And you're not going to be young forever. You know, for entrepreneurs, our retirement plan may not be some pension, right? Some of us actually have to think about what's going to happen when we get to that point where we're not as active as we are now. So you have to be very careful the kinds of businesses you choose to work on. And then you have a choice in the matter, right? You can't just say, you know, I stumbled on this idea and I didn't have a choice. It's a lie. You always have a choice. Nobody puts a gun to your head and says, you know, you must exploit this opportunity. Most times, entrepreneurs deliberately walk themselves into these kinds of businesses that I'm going to talk about in this episode. So the whole thing about I was forced into it, I didn't have a choice, there was a way it happened, it happened so fast, forget all those excuses. The truth is, you have a choice in the matter. So in this episode, I will share six types of businesses that I never want to have in my life. If I have that choice to make, I never want to have these businesses. And I'm also going to mention the only conditions that would ever make me consider, you know, any of these business opportunities. So there are six of them. Now, before I delve into the six types of businesses I never want to have in my life, I want you to understand the reasons why I don't want these kinds of businesses. In fact, there are three specific things I'm looking for in a business before I get excited about it or even decide to commit my time, my energy, and my money to chase such an opportunity. So the three things, the first of them is control and flexibility. I need to be able to influence how much I get, what I do, and who I work with. So essentially, I'm not looking for a job. I'm not looking for some boss or somebody who's going to tell me what to do and how I'm going to do it and how much I get paid. I'm not looking for a job. So if a business opportunity sounds like a job, it looks like a job, you're not going to see me close to it because I want something that gives me control, flexibility, and freedom. And that's like, it's arguably the biggest benefit we get as entrepreneurs. You know, we love control, we love flexibility, we love freedom. So if a business opportunity is not going to give me that, I'm not going to touch it. The second thing I'm looking for is leverage. I need to do something. I need to get much more than I put in. And this is not just about money. I'm talking about leverage for my time, for my talent, and for the work that I do. So it goes beyond money. I need to get much more than I put in. I don't want to get something that is like directly proportional or something. No. If I'm going to spend my time, and as far as I'm concerned, time is the most precious resource that anybody can have. If you have time, you know, you're alive, you can talk about your talent and things that you can do. So essentially, I'm looking for leverage. I'm looking for something that can give me times 3, times 5, times 10 of the time that I put in, of the work that I put in, of the money that I put in. If there's no leverage, or if the leverage is low, I'm not going to touch it. The third thing I'm looking for, which is very important, but unfortunately, a lot of people take this for granted, is that I am not going to touch a business that doesn't give me pride and peace of mind. So I need to be proud of any business I'm involved with. I need to be proud enough to tell my friends about it, to tell my kids about it, to tell my spouse about it. If I'm not proud of it, if I can't talk about it, if I can more or less borderline brag about it, then what's the point of getting involved? Because that's where the excitement, that's where the rush of energy and, you know, the emotions and the passion involved. If I'm not proud of it, I'm not going to do it. And of course, peace of mind. Very, very important. Unfortunately, people take this for granted, right? I don't want any business that won't give me peace of mind, that will make me sleep well at night, that will make me always look over my shoulder, that will make me only sleep with one eye open. I'm not going to touch those kinds of businesses. So I wanted to get these things out of the way. Like I mentioned, the first is control and flexibility. The second is leverage. The third is pride and peace of mind. So now that we have this out of the way, let's now focus specifically on the 6 types of businesses I never want to do in my life. If I'm presented with a choice, my first and only answer would be no, I don't want to do this. The first type of business, and before I go ahead, some of these things might be surprising to you. Some of them might be shocking to you. Some of you, in fact, many of you may be involved in at least one of these kinds of businesses. And I'm not saying these things to disparage or disrespect or not honor your choices, right? The reason I'm saying this is, if you think about the title of this episode, it's actually personal. I'm talking about myself. I'm not saying you shouldn't do any of these businesses. I'm talking about myself. These are businesses that I, as John Paul, because I am a person who has, I have my own tastes, I have my own preferences, I have my own personality, I have my own passions, I have my own skills, I have my own, you know. So there is only one kind of person like me in the world. The same way there is only one kind of person like you in the world. All of us are unique. There's no way we're all going to like the same things, right? So I needed to get this out of the way. That I talk about a business here does not mean that, you know, you shouldn't do it or you should take it the wrong way. I'm talking about myself, and I'm justifying it with the reasons why I will not want to do these kinds of businesses. So please, let's just get that, you know, really sorted. I am not, you know, if you're doing or you're running any business like the ones I'm going to talk about, I do not mean this in any disrespectful way. I'm just talking about myself, right? And I'm hoping that as I talk through these things, you too can learn one or two things from it, right? So that's out of the way, that disclaimer out of the way, let's go ahead. The first kind of business I never want to do, I don't want to touch, is a commodity business. Interestingly, this is a popular kind of business. And when I mean popular, many people do these kind of businesses. Now, if you don't know what a commodity business is, let me try and explain. In my books, the way I see it from my experience, a commodity business is a business that only competes on price. And what I mean is, if you take 2 commodity businesses and you compare them, the product is the same. The way they sell the product is the same. The people they sell to most times the same. The only different thing between the first business and the second business usually is price. One person sells at a higher or lower price than the other person. So it's only price. So if you're talking about competitive advantage, or what is the difference, or what is your differentiating factor, it's price. That's what I mean by a commodity business. Now, I say this from a place of experience. I'm not just saying it because I don't like those kinds of businesses. I've been involved in my own fair share of commodity businesses in my life. At the time, I was involved in egg sales. So we go buy from the farms and then we try to distribute. So, but the funny thing about eggs is when you're trying to get into the business, you hear everybody eats eggs. Eggs are in high demand. Everybody wants eggs. The market for eggs is, you know, XXX billion dollars every year. You know, people eat eggs, 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 eggs. And then you rush into the egg business. Now, the interesting thing about eggs is that most eggs look the same. Maybe sometimes the price, the sizes of the eggs may be different. But most times, the only difference between one egg seller and the other egg seller is the price. That's the only thing most times, right? I was also involved in raw farm produce. So for those people who know my history, at the time I was involved in, you know, farming. That got me featured on this, on CNN, you know. I got involved in farming. We were involved in agricultural produce. And when you look at agricultural produce, if, you know, for example, we'll produce cassava, plantain, oil bean seeds, and stuff like that. The interesting thing about farming is that when a farmer labors and does all the hard work of cultivating something, it could be whatever product that is, the moment the farmer harvests that product, just like hundreds and thousands of other farmers who are harvesting that product in that season, they are in a commodity business because cassava looks the same across most farms. Rice looks the same. Maize looks the same. At harvest, most agricultural produce look the same. The only difference sometimes is price. It's just price. You know, and I saw this firsthand. And another interesting business I was involved in at some time on my entrepreneurial journey was the sale and marketing of refined petroleum products, usually PMS, premium motor spirits, and diesel. So we would buy from the importers and then sell upcountry. So, but the interesting thing is everybody uses petrol. Everybody uses diesel. It's either you use it in your car, in your trucks, in your buses, in your power generators. It's a very fast moving product because people want it. But when you really look at it, right, what's the difference between one person's petrol and the other person's petrol? Because don't forget, all this petrol comes from some refinery somewhere. It's the refinery that standardizes the product. So everybody who is a marketer or a salesperson is selling the same identical product. There's no difference. The only difference is price. So we would compete on price. Sometimes we would buy a product and because we were under pressure to sell it, we were selling at a loss. And that's because there wasn't really much we could compete on. We couldn't compete on the quality, on the superior quality of our product. We couldn't do that because we didn't make the product. We didn't refine the petroleum. We couldn't compete on what now? Customer service or promptness of delivery. Those things were taken for granted in the industry. Everybody can deliver within a short period of time. Everybody was doing essentially the same thing. The only way you could compete was price. And guess what people were doing? If you're under pressure to sell, you reduce your price. And as you reduce your price, you're cutting into your profit margins. I had to run away from that business. I ran away with my tail between my legs. And this is an industry where they tell you there are a lot of oil barons, people make a lot of money and stuff like that. But I have firsthand experience. And I don't like commodity businesses because of what they've done to me. So when I talk about commodity business, I'm coming from a place of pain. I'm coming from a place of experience. And I'm happy I had those experiences because right now I can easily spot a commodity business. Somebody shows up with an opportunity. I ask a couple of questions. And the moment I discover it's a commodity business, that there is really no way to compete except price, I just say no. And sometimes some people are so excited about their business ideas that they do not listen to reason when I'm trying to tell them, you know, this thing might sound exciting, it might sound this and that, but I don't really find a lot of or enough differentiating factors that will separate you from all the other people who are doing this business. At the end of the day, you will be forced to compete only on price. And when you compete on price, it's a dive to the bottom. You never win that kind of battle, right? So that's the thing about commodity businesses. And you know, when you're talking about price is the easiest thing to copy in your business. It might be difficult to copy your business model. It might be difficult to copy how you make your product. It might be difficult to copy several other things. But the easiest thing anybody can copy from you is your price. You know why? Your price is public information. You cannot sell except you make your price public. So anybody can show up and ask and say, well, you know, what's your price? And they can easily find out what your price is. And the moment they find out your price, they can copy your price. And they can try to beat you at your own game. They can reduce their price, and then you join them in reducing it. Before you know what's happening, you're in a price war. Before you know what's happening, your margins are eroded, and then you're no longer in business, right? So pricing is too easy to copy. It doesn't give you a sustainable competitive advantage. You cannot say that the reason you are the best option is that you are the cheapest. Somebody else can beat you to your low price. In fact, there have been very interesting price wars where your competition would deliberately sell at a loss just to kick you out of the market. That's how desperate people can be when it's about price, because they can easily copy you. But if there was something else involved, you know, you can set a price and stick to that price, and it will be difficult for anybody to copy you, because you're not just competing on price. There are other things that make you a unique proposition. Your value is unique. It's not just about price. It's about those things your competition cannot copy. It's about those things you're doing within your business that makes you an excellent provider on the market. Those things are not easy to copy. But if the only thing you can compete with is price, then anybody can beat you at that game. So, you know, having said this, does this mean that I would never do a commodity business? Well, like I told you at some time in the beginning of this episode, I will only do a commodity business if there is one condition that can be fulfilled. That's the only condition under which I would get involved in a commodity business. And that condition is that I can be a monopoly in the market. By monopoly, I mean I will be one of very few, you know, businesses that provide that product or provide that service. Or I will be the only business. So if you cannot give me monopoly power, where I will be the only person, the only business supplying that product or that service, or I will just be one of very few. In this sense, it's called a cartel. If I'm not going to be part of a cartel is not, it's nothing evil. A cartel is just that you have a small number of players in the market who have come together to seal up that market. It happens in many markets, in many industries in Africa, where you just have a few players who make it difficult for anybody else to come into the market, and they dominate that market, they set the pricing. Now, if you are somebody who has socialist tendencies, you may not like the idea of being a monopoly or being a cartel. But if you believe in free enterprise, you believe in capitalism, you know, I believe in a brand of capitalism with a conscience. I don't think that everything should be about money, about profits. I think that business should have a conscience, especially when it comes to the consumer, the customer, the employees, the environment, you know. Money should not trump everything. We need to care about other stuff. But that's not what this episode is about. So all I'm saying is the only condition under which I will get involved in a commodity business is if I can limit the number of players, because that's the only way all of us will have enough market share, you know, to enjoy that business without going into a price war that will be a dive to the bottom. Now, as an offhand comment, right, in case you're thinking, you know, I'm involved in the business and really there's just one way I can compete, it's just price. What else can I do, right? So price is just one lever in your toolbox of competitive advantages, right? Right. All I'm just saying is it's not your strongest tool. It's a tool, but it's not your strongest tool. There are other tools that are better. For example, quality. If your quality is superior to other products on the market, then you can set a price and stick to it. And some customers will buy you even at your higher price, because they're not buying you for your price. They're buying you for your quality. And that quality they can't find somewhere else. So quality is usually a very solid and sustainable competitive advantage. Another is convenience. If you are more convenient, if it is more convenient to buy from you than from other people, then people will come to you. So if, for example, I make an order and I get it quickly, you provide me with support, you handle the risk. So if I don't like the product, I can return it. You know, even the way you treat your customers and stuff like that, that can be a sustainable competitive advantage, right? Another is service, the quality of your service, how you talk to your customers, how you deal with them, what happens before they buy your product, while they are buying your product, and after they buy your product. So for example, some businesses do, you buy from us, we'll do a free installation for you, right? That installation costs money, but you're extending it as some level of service to your customer. These are ways you can differentiate yourself. Another is brand. You know, interestingly, branding has become obfuscated somehow. It's been, these days, it's even difficult to understand what really a brand is. But essentially, you can imagine, if I give the examples of some of the major brands in the world, for example, let me use Apple, right? Apple is not the only phone maker in the world. They are not the only ones who make smartphones. But the moment they release a smartphone, you have people sleeping outside of Apple offices in the middle of the night, just so that they can wake up and be one of the first people in the line to buy the phones when the shops open the next day. Now, you may call that madness, but you know, in my books, that is loyalty, absolute loyalty to a brand. Apple has built their brand to such an extent that their customers now behave like crazy people because of the product. They are mad and crazy about the product. Another example is Nike, the shoemakers, right? The company that makes shoes for athletes and sports enthusiasts and all of that. Apple has Nike has built itself into a cult brand. There are people who are called sneakerheads. They are collectors of Nike shoes, you know, and stuff like that. Those people will not wear any other kind of shoes because they are loyal, absolutely loyal to a brand. So if you can build what your company stands for, what your business stands for, into a brand where the loyalty sets in, then that can be a strong competitive advantage, because it happens that when you have a strong brand, it really doesn't matter what your competitors do. They will always find it difficult to steal your customers. They can lower their price. They can give away their products for free. They can do all sorts of things. But it might be very, very difficult to steal your customers, because your customers are absolutely loyal to your brand. And sometimes it can be about relationship. Have you ever walked into a business before and, you know, you're trying to convince somebody to buy from you and you're offering a better price than what they are currently buying at? You're giving them better service and all that, but they still tell you, "I'm so sorry, your offer is nice, but I cannot buy from you." And you're trying to understand, why wouldn't you buy from me? It's a straightforward offer. What I'm offering you is better than what you're currently getting. Why will you not buy from me? Sometimes when you dig in, the reason they are not buying from you, despite your best attempt to win them over, is because of a relationship. They have a relationship with their current supplier that they have had for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. When they were nothing, when they were small, that person stood by them. You know, that person came for their wedding. That person knows their kids. So there's a relationship that's been built over the last 3-5 years. You can't just come in with your lowball offer, with your lower price and all your sweet talk, and just expect that that person is going to burn that relationship. It's not going to happen, right? So relationships can be a solid competitive advantage if you go beyond transactions. I talk about this quite a lot on the podcast. So if you've listened to a couple of my previous podcasts, you will know I'm big on relationships, because some businesses make the mistake of just dealing in transactions. Right? A customer buys from you, you give them the product, you take their money, and then you say bye-bye. And that's it. That's a transaction, right? And when you have transactions, there's nothing personal about it. There's no relationship involved. There's no emotional connection. So it's very easy for that customer to walk on to the next person that gives them a better offer. And they're not going to feel a thing. They're not going to feel like they betrayed you or something. But when a relationship is involved, it's not that easy. Because the person is already entangled with you emotionally. So they are going to feel like they're betraying you if they buy from somebody else. Even though you are more expensive, even though your service is not like superior, they are going to find it difficult to buy from somebody else because they have a relationship with you. So relationships, very, very important, bottom line. So the bottom line for this first type of business I just talked about, commodity businesses, is that if your business only competes on price, you're in trouble because you will not last. Somebody else can show up and beat you to that price. And like I've told you, some people can be very desperate that they will go to a price that you cannot go to and deliberately sell at a loss just to push you out of the market. I hope you don't run into such a competitor. But the thing is, hope is not a strategy. You cannot rely on hope as a strategy. You can't just say, "I hope that never happens to me." Then you are not a serious business person. You need to have a strategy to make sure that doesn't happen. It's only when your strategy fails that you can rely on hope. But hope cannot be your frontline strategy. So that's it out of the way. The first kind of business I never want to do in my life is a commodity business. The second kind of business I never want to do in my life, if I have the choice, is a single customer business. Essentially, a single customer business is a business that makes most of its sales, most of its revenues from one customer. It doesn't matter how big that customer is. What I mean by this is that most of your money, most of the money that your business makes comes from one customer. And you know, the interesting thing is some single customers can be very tempting because, for example, government contracts. Governments are like the one of the biggest types of customers you can have. There are some companies, there are some industries that exclusively service government as their main customer. Take the defense industry, for example. You are a company in the defense industry, you make missiles or you make surveillance systems. Essentially, you create items that are used in war. There's no other person you can sell that to. It's only the government that can buy missiles and bombs and all that. So, and these companies are very big companies, multi-billion dollar companies, but they only have one customer, the government, right? Another kind of big customer can be big multinational companies. Like, you know, there are companies that, you know, exclusively serve a big customer in the oil industry, like maybe ExxonMobil, or you are a contractor to Toyota. You make parts for the engines of Toyota motorcycles or Toyota cars or something. There are companies that serve only one customer. You know, there are, besides this, there's also a lot of interesting stuff going on in the nonprofit sector. There are contractors that service the United Nations, the WHO, the World Bank. And these are big companies that are doing well. The only thing is that they service just one major customer. Now, like I said, if I have the choice, I would not want to do this kind of business where I am wholly dependent, or the destiny of my business is wholly dependent on one customer. Why? It might not be obvious to you, but it's very obvious to me, right? A single customer limits my choices and limits my control and flexibility. If you are dependent on a single customer, the bargaining power in that relationship lies with the customer, because the customer knows that without them, you're nothing. And what will it cost a big company like ExxonMobil or an organization like the United Nations to dump you and choose another company? It's not, you know, it's not going to take them much. They're not going to lose much. But guess what? You are going to lose far more. It might even crush you. That kind of behavior. So the bargaining power in that relationship lies with the single customer, not with you. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't like that kind of relationship where I am dependent on you. My destiny is tied to your decisions, your whims and your caprices and all that. And the thing is, when one party bears most of the bargaining power, they can exploit that advantage. You see, that I don't want to be at the mercy of somebody. So that's why I don't want those kind of situation. So I think it's very clear. If most of the revenues that a company makes or a business makes is dependent on one major customer, what happens when that company is going through hard times? And it's not difficult to see. We're just coming out of the COVID epidemic. Many big companies were hit. Many big companies had to, they fired a lot of workers. They had to trim down their operations. Now, the thing is, while you were listening to the news, while you were reading the newspapers, you notice that the employees lost their jobs, right? But most times you don't hear about the suppliers, the people, the businesses that do business with those big companies that also suffer because those big companies are going through a hard time. So when those companies or those organizations go through a hard time, the person who depends on them wholly gets to suffer far more. Now, will I ever do this kind of business if I, you know, if I just had to do it? Now, if I had to do a single customer business, it will be based on just one condition. And that condition should be that I would have leverage in that relationship. And by leverage, what I mean is an example, like an exclusive arrangement. So what the exclusive arrangement means is that the big company, the single customer I'm serving, cannot just wake up one day and dump me. And that's because we have some exclusivity that we are the only company that will serve that client. So if I have an exclusivity arrangement, then I may consider a single customer business. Another point of leverage that I would need that will make me consider a single customer business is a long-term contract. So if I have a contract signed for 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, then that's added security, because I know that, you know, the worst that can happen is that in the next 5 years, my business may not have this customer, but it gives me an opportunity to plan and to prepare, right? So if I have a long-term contract, that would be an extra layer of security. Another kind of leverage would be if I'm in a monopoly position. If I am the only business that can make that product or provide that service that big company needs, then I'm in a secure position. Because what it means is that they can't easily dump me. Because if they dump me, they can't really find my product anywhere else. Because I'm like the only company, or like I'm the only business that does it. So if I don't have this condition where I have leverage in the relationship, I don't want to get into a single customer relationship where the customer bears most of the influence and most of the bargaining power in that relationship, and I can be taken advantage of whenever they please. So that's it for single customer businesses. The third type of business I would really, really not want to consider, I never want to have in my life, is an illegal business. And, you know, this is, it's important to mention this because it's not as if it doesn't happen. There are legit businesses. There are also illegitimate businesses. And some of them are obviously illegitimate businesses. Some of them are what I like to call coded. You know, it's not obvious on the surface. But, you know, when you really look deep, this, you just know it's not legit. So, and the reason why, of course, an illegal business will be off my table is that the risk and the lack of peace of mind is just not worth it for me. For some people, they might like the adrenaline rush. They might like to live on the edge of adventure and excitement. I'm not sure that's something I'm interested in. I don't want to be looking over my shoulder or not be able to sleep well at night because I'm worried that, you know, the law may come after me or the police may come after me, you know, that sort of thing. Now, that being said, I need to say something particularly about illegal businesses. And in my book, there are two main types of illegal businesses. The first type are the businesses that are illegal because the laws are outdated or unreasonable. I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Remember, something is illegal because the law in your country says that this thing is illegal. But don't forget that it's people who make the laws. And as long as people make the laws, people can be biased. People can move their own agenda. So I'm not saying that illegality is subjective, but just try and follow my thinking here. Now, so what I mean is some businesses are illegal because the laws are unreasonable or they're outdated. Now, the second kind of illegal business are businesses that actually hurt people, businesses that actually harm people. For example, you say you're in a business where you traffic young girls or young boys from your African country to the US or Europe, where all sorts of things happen to them. You're in the human trafficking business. You're actually hurting people. You're damaging those young people. Or you're involved in a business that steals from people. Whether it's a business that steals, you know, by the barrel of a gun, or a business that does so online, maybe through some shady criminal activity online. You're still hurting people. You're stealing people's money. You're stealing their savings. You're stealing their pension. You're hurting people. Or a business that is involved in, that involves substance abuse. Maybe it's a business that involves some banned substance like heroin, cocaine. You're damaging people, right? Because people who consume those things, they get damaged. Or you're involved in a business that uses or promotes violence or deceit. So there are businesses that actually hurt people. And as far as I'm concerned, those are illegitimate businesses. But remember what I said about those businesses that are illegal because the laws are outdated or unreasonable. Now, the reason I said that is there were businesses that were once illegal just a couple of years ago. And today, they are legal almost everywhere. Everybody's adopting them now. They're legal. But some years ago, they were illegal. One example is marijuana. You know, weed. Smoking weed growing up used to be illegal. Right now, you have several states in the United States, several countries around the world, many of them in Europe, you know, they've legalized the use of marijuana. Some of them have legalized recreational marijuana, where you can smoke weed or marijuana just like people smoke cigarettes. But then some other countries have legalized only marijuana for clinical use. Because guess what? They found out that certain types of marijuana are useful to people who are going through some health challenges, people who have chronic pain, people who are suffering from depression or mental illness or something like that. But bottom line is there are a lot of countries that now have thriving businesses that are making a lot of money by exporting marijuana, either for medical use or for recreational use. But just some years ago, marijuana was an illegal substance. So that's just one example. Another is the betting and gambling industry. Several years ago, betting and gambling was illegal in many countries. But right now, there's sports betting. There's all kinds of betting. They don't call it gambling, but really, that's what it is. They call it betting. They made it fashionable. They now call it gaming. Some people even call it gaming. That it's not betting, it's gaming. But my point is this. I don't really have an opinion for or against. All I'm saying is, it used to be an illegal business. But now, it's widely accepted in many countries, and they are now multi-million dollar, or even multi-billion dollar businesses. Another interesting recent example is cryptocurrency. When cryptocurrency came out just about a decade ago, it used to be a shadow business because people would say, you know, cryptocurrency is used for the underworld, it's used for the dark net, it's only criminals who use crypto. But right now, we're beginning to see gradual adoption into the mainstream. You even have countries that have adopted crypto as legal tender. Right? I think, what's the name of that country again in South America? It was just at the top of my head. But, you know, and, you know, some economies, some places, crypto is now accepted as a medium of exchange, as a store of value. But several years ago, it was a business that was considered shady and a currency that was used only by criminals and money launderers. So the reason I'm saying this is this. When I say illegal business, I've just told you that there's a distinction. There are businesses that I think will remain illegal even in 1,000 years' time. If you're a business that hurts people, steals from people, damages lives, whether emotionally or physically, I think even in 1,000 years, you're going to be illegal, right? But then there are those businesses that are just on the fringe of the law, where, you know, for example, the laws are outdated, or the people who make those laws are unreasonable, or are not as far-sighted, or are not objective, you know? So, and I've just given you some examples. So that's just how I would balance it. Now, what is the condition under which I will be involved in the so-called illegal business, right? I would only be drawn to it if I see that the laws are unreasonable and I make a bet and say, this business may be illegal today, but it may not be illegal for very long. And clearly, the business should not harm people. It should not steal from people. It should not cause damage to humans or the environment. That's the only condition under which I'm going to touch it. Now, the fourth kind of business I don't want to do, or I never want to do in my life, but I may consider it if the conditions are right, is a single location dependent business, right? Now, this is, I think, if I had to rank all the six businesses in this episode, this one may feature at the bottom because a lot of people don't really consider location as a, you know, as something that might be undesirable. But I need you to listen to me because I'm going to make quite a point here. So a single location dependent business is important because of what I'm about to say. Now, I had a look at the Forbes list of the world's richest people, and I looked at the top 12. And it was surprising that up to about 60 to 70% of the top 12 on the Forbes list have businesses that are not location dependent. What it means is that if something happened to one of their locations in some country or some state, it would not shut down their empire. So, for example, I'm looking at Jeff Bezos. He has Amazon. Amazon has fulfillment centers across the Western world, right? I'm looking at Bill Gates. Core asset is Microsoft. Microsoft is a virtual company. It's a software company. They can be anywhere and everywhere. Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, now Meta. He owns Instagram and WhatsApp. Those businesses don't have a single location. They are on the internet. They can operate from everywhere and from anywhere. There's Larry Ellison, the guy who built Oracle. Software company, anywhere. Elon Musk, he owns an electric car company, Tesla. He owns a spaceship company, SpaceX. He's also involved in solar and a couple of other things. You know, arguably, he's not location dependent. If something happens to one of his factories, I doubt that it's going to pull him down, right? So this is particularly important because The COVID-19 crisis taught the world a bitter lesson about location-dependent businesses. Most of the businesses that were hit by the pandemic were location-dependent businesses. These were businesses where their employees could not go to work because there was restriction of movement, because there were lockdowns. So if your employees cannot go to work, what it means is that your equipment cannot operate, your production will not work, you cannot sell, your customers cannot buy from you because they cannot visit your office or your shop. So I think COVID really pushed down that message. And the interesting thing is that a single location restricts you and limits the potential of your business. Because if something happens to that single location where your business is, you know, you're really out of business. So this also, I have a personal experience in this. That was when I made the decision to make my company, Small Starter, to make it location independent. I moved it from a consulting practice in Lagos and I put it on the internet. And today it's a company, it's a business that serves clients in various parts of the world. These are people I would never, ever have served. And I have never met 90% of my customers. I've never seen them before physically. We have Zoom calls, we have conversations, we send emails, I send them their deliverables, we discuss strategy, I render my services. I've never seen them. I don't know how tall they are. That's one interesting example. Because when you're on Zoom and on WhatsApp and you're talking to people, you know their voice, you've seen their face, you know how they sound, but you don't know how tall they are. So that's one interesting way I like to categorize it. I don't know how tall my customers are because I've never met 90% of them. And for many of them, they spent a lot of money, you know, doing business with me. So it's a fantastic thing when your business is location independent. I can travel with my business. I can work from anywhere, anytime. I personally have resisted, you know, opportunities to tie myself to some location, some office, somewhere, anywhere. I want to be fluid. I want to be free. So the moment it involves showing up at some location every day, I don't want to have that kind of business. I'm not interested in that kind of business. Now, under what condition would I consider a single location business, right? So if I'm already diversified into other businesses, you know, I'm doing other businesses and I see a good opportunity for a location dependent company or a location dependent business, I might consider that opportunity. And the reason I'll consider it is I already have other streams of income. If anything happens to that location-dependent business, it will not pull me down. So I think the message here is, I will not start, if I were going to start from scratch, you know, I will not start with a location-dependent business. But if I've already started and I have other businesses, I can consider a location-dependent business. So the goal here is spreading the risk and making sure you are not tied to any one location. I guess that's the message. Now, let's move on to the fifth type of business I don't want to do, that I would not be interested in, you know, in normal circumstances. And that is a low-priced time for money business. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I want you to stick with me here. A low-priced time for money business. Now, this is the services version of a commodity business. If you've been following this episode, you would remember what I said about a commodity business. A commodity business is a business that only competes on price. And usually commodities are products. Most commodity businesses deal in products. And the reason why products are very vulnerable to being commodities is that if you're building a product that is standard in its dimension, in its quality, like eggs, right? Once the eggs come out of the chicken, they look identical. The only difference might just be the size. But then the grade the eggs in the farm and they sort them according to size. So by the time you're going to take the eggs as a distributor, you're taking crates of eggs that are more or less the same in size, in appearance, in quality and all that. The only difference is to go sell them based on price. So, but a low price time for money business is the services version of a commodity business. In this case, you are rendering services, right? And the thing is, like I mentioned earlier in this episode, time is the most valuable resource that humans have. You have to use your time in a leveraged way because all of us have 24 hours. The richest person in the world has the same 24 hours that you have. The poorest person in the world has the same number of hours in a day that a rich person has. All of us have 24 hours in a day. So if all of us are limited by this resource, that's the interesting thing about time. It's a limited resource. You cannot create more of it. You cannot reduce it. The only way to reduce your time is to die. And I'm hoping that is not on your agenda, right? So if this resource is so valuable that it is limited in the distribution of it, what it then means is that if you want to get more out of what you have, you have to be paid more for your time. So that's what I mean by leverage. You need to leverage your time, because if you give away your time as a commodity, if you give away your time for a low price, then you're essentially losing big time, because you're selling a resource that you cannot create more of, and you're selling it at a giveaway price. That's what working, you know, giving away your time for a low price comes to. You know, so if you're going to work with your time, if you're going to give away your time, then you should be charging a premium for your time. You should be charging a premium for your time. So let me give you an example of this in my own personal experience, right? So I started off in consulting. And the way consulting works is you are selling your time to your customers. You're selling your time to your clients. Somebody wants a session with you, you're selling your time. Somebody wants you to show up and do some training or host a session, host some strategy session, some company reorganization or turnaround session. You are selling your time as a consultant. That's how it is. It doesn't matter if you're a lawyer, if you're a doctor, if you're an accountant. These are professions and industries where they sell services. And essentially, it's consulting. So if you're selling services, especially when it is personalized service, what you're selling is your time. So you need to leverage your time. So what did I do? Rather than serving customers on a one-to-one basis, what I did was I converted that thing, that service, into a product. So I created virtual training programs. I created standalone programs. I created courses, detailed courses. So I don't need to teach you one-on-one. You can sign up to my program. You can buy the program, and then you can learn on your own, because all those things are already recorded. They are in audio. They are in video, right? So what that means is that I'm no longer selling my time, because while I'm sleeping, somebody may buy my course and is taking the course. The person is getting value, but I'm not present. So I'm not selling my time. So that's how I got out of the selling my time. Then what I then did was, if you want my time, you have to pay premium for it. So all my VIP clients, those ones that I have one-on-one sessions with, those ones that have direct access to me, they value it because they have to pay for it. If I had the option, I would not sell my time. I will use my time to do the interesting stuff that I want to do. I would not want to sell my time. But if I had to sell my time, it would be at a premium. So that's why my premium services right now, all of them are consulting. I may have 5 clients in a year, 2 clients in a year, 1 client in a year. I'm not bothered. Because what it does is, if you're going to get on that service, you must be willing to pay me. And the reason you're paying me is that I'm giving you my most valuable resource, my time. It's so valuable that if you want it, you have to pay for it. So this is the reverse of what some people do. Some people easily give away their time. They sell their time for pennies, and you give 4 years of your life, 5 years of your life, 10 years of your life. Now, the reason why this is very personal to me is I'm not one of those entrepreneurs who came out of school and decided to be an entrepreneur. I envy those people because they know what they wanted. I started the hard way, which I'm grateful for, because I learned a lot of things in corporate while working for other people. I worked in other organizations before I pulled myself out, which is a totally different story, to start my business, right? I know what it feels like to be selling your time for peanuts. And that's what people who have some kinds of jobs do. If you have a low-paying job, that's what it means. You're giving away the best time of your life for peanuts. And then you start to imagine, why is it that when they advertise these jobs, they're looking for young people? You must not be older than 20, although it's some form of discrimination. But if they are willing to tell you, they are always looking for young people. They want people in their 20s. You know why? They want to suck you just before you start hitting your midlife crisis. They take the best of your time at a very, low enough salary, right? the people who get the kick or the people who get solid deals out of jobs are people in the C-suite or senior employees. Once you are in executive management or you are a senior manager, that's when it starts to pay off. Because based on the salary they are paying you more for your time. But when you are a junior employee, it's not a solid deal. They are paying you peanuts for your time, right? Now, if I had to go back, I'm grateful for the things that I learned in corporate. I'm grateful for the experiences. I'm particularly grateful for the people I met, because many of those people today have grown. They refer business. We do stuff together. We're in touch. We do networking and stuff. So I'm grateful for all of that. So if you had to factor in all those things, maybe it was a good deal. But if you had to look at it on a time for money basis, then, you know, it wasn't really solid, right? So the other area you need to look at is, so right now my premium service, which is built on the skill that I have the most expertise when it comes to helping businesses to start, to grow, and to scale. That's where my experience lies. That's where my expertise lies. But I also have other skills that I have, things that I can do, but I don't like to sell them. Why? Let me give you one example. Graphic design, website development. The small starter site, for example, I'm not always quick to admit it, but I built it myself. It's particularly outstanding in terms of design. It's not like the best in the world, but you know, for people who see it, they're like, you know, this site looks nice. I designed it myself. But guess what? It was not an efficient use of my time. I'm not an expert web designer. So when I was building the site, or when I need to do maintenance work on it, I do it out of entertainment. It's just something I like to do in my spare time, right? But I'm not going to charge for it. Do you know why? If I had to build a website, it might take me several days or even weeks, because I'm not an expert. I'm slow at it. It's not something I've done. I can't really get to the solution. I have to try different things before I find something that works. I'm not an expert. So it will take me several weeks. But guess what? An expert web designer can get the site ready in a couple of hours or a couple of days. Now, that is an efficient use of time. I will only do stuff that I can perform solidly at. And when it comes to business strategy, business development, you know, all of those things, investment readiness, all of that, that's where my A game is. That's what I'm good at. So I can help people get results fast, right? So that's what I sell, and I sell it at a premium. But imagine me selling my time as a graphic designer. That would be terrible, because I'll be giving away my time for peanuts, because I'm doing something that I'm good at, but I'm not an expert at. So because I'm not an expert, I cannot charge a premium for it. So that's why I don't do those sort of things. I just reserve it for myself, or maybe for family. Somebody's trying to prepare some banner or poster or business card. When I have the time, I just do it. I do it out of fun. But I will not do it for money, because I will not be confident to charge high enough, because I'm not an expert at it. I hope you understand exactly what I'm saying. So essentially what I'm saying is I value my time. I think time is my most valuable resource. I will not want to sell my time, but if I had to sell my time, I would have to charge a premium for it. And if I'm going to charge a premium for it, it should be because I deserve it, because I'm charging for a skill or for a service that I can deliver top-notch, top quality on. So I hope you get what the drift is. All I'm against is giving away your time for pennies. That's not a good deal. And I will never touch a business that will treat me or my time that way. Now, the sixth kind of business I don't want to touch in my lifetime is what I call a treadmill business. So let me explain what a treadmill business is. A treadmill business is a type of business where your income is strongly proportional to the time and effort you put in at the work. So essentially, it's a 1:1 ratio of effort and results. So it's a 100% active income business. If you don't work, you don't make anything. No work, no chow. No work, no chow. If you don't work, you don't get anything. Essentially, it's a job. It's not a business. That's interesting about this kind of... So any business that will not pay me except I am active, I don't think it's worth my time, because that is poor leverage. It doesn't give me good leverage. Good leverage is that you can make more on the amount of time you put in. You can make more on the amount of money you put in. But if I cannot make anything because I didn't do anything, then I don't think that is fair on my own time. So this whole no work, no chow, I look at it when I look at an opportunity. Once I see any sign of it, I run for the hills. I don't want to do anything that will put me on a treadmill. And you know the way a treadmill works. You cannot stop running when you're on a treadmill. Once the treadmill is on, you have to keep on moving. So it's like a rat race. I hate rat races. You know why? Okay, this is some joke. You may laugh at it or you may not. The reason I hate the rat race is that even if you win the race, you are still a rat. That's why it's called a rat race, right? I don't want to be involved in the rat race because even if I'm the fastest runner in a rat race and I win, I'm still a rat. I don't want to be a rat. So that's why I don't get involved in that kind of business. So essentially what this means is I don't want a zero leverage type of business. I believe in passive income. I believe that you should have something that pays you above and beyond your active time. You cannot work for 24 hours. Because even out of the 24 hours I'm talking about, it's not as if you work 24 hours. Out of 24 hours, what is medically recommended for a healthy lifestyle is to have between 7 to 8 hours of sleep. So you already have 7 to 8 hours of sleep out of 24 hours. That is one third of your day gone. You still need to take care of yourself, have a bath, eat, get to your place of work, play, hang out, have some work-life balance. So at most, for some people, for most normal people, they get to work maybe 10 hours, 8 to 10 hours. I know that there are some crazy people who work the time you're working is crazy, where they work 2-3 jobs. And sometimes they are hitting like 12 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours in a day. It's not sustainable. Your body is going to revolt. It's not healthy, right? So any business that treats me like a rat on a treadmill is not something I would willingly walk into, right? Except maybe I'm being pushed into it against my will. I'm some prisoner somewhere, or somebody is just trying to use it to blackmail me or something, but I will not willingly walk into that kind of business. So now, is there any condition under which I will do a treadmill business? Remember, like I mentioned earlier, I'm very open-minded about these things. So it's not as if it's black and white. That's why I'm telling you that there are certain conditions under which I may consider these businesses I've talked about. Now, when it comes to a treadmill business, the only condition under which I will consider a treadmill business is if I can charge a premium price for my time. So if I am doing no work, no chow, and I know I'm charging a premium for my time, what it means is that I can work for an amount for a period, 6 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. And what that allows me to do is to save up and invest for passive income and get to a point where I can resign that job, I can pull back and start to explore other interesting options. So for some people, this is a practical reality. There are people who have started their business and they started from employment. They were working for somebody. They were on a treadmill. They were on a job and they were doing that job for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. They saved up enough money. They resigned from that job and then they started their own business. And now they have employees working for them. They are living on passive income because they make more than they put in. They make more for their time, you know? So they make far more than what they put in, which is exactly what the dream is, which is what leverage is. Every successful entrepreneur knows how to use leverage. You use human leverage. You use other people's time, other people's talents. You use other people's money. That's what the banks are for. The banks have always been there to provide leverage to business people because you borrow other people's money, you pay something small, and then you get to keep the rest. So it's all about leverage. So that's why I mentioned it. So at this point in the episode, let's recap. I started this episode by talking about the temptations that entrepreneurs face. On a daily, weekly, monthly basis, you are likely to come across interesting opportunities and ideas that would excite you and tempt you, right? And then I said, you need to be careful what you walk into because sometimes the opportunities that attract you are not really the best for you. They may end up giving you, you know, they may end up leaving a sour taste in your mouth. So you need to be careful what you get yourself into. I also mentioned that you cannot claim that somebody forced you into it because you have a choice in the matter. You have a choice to say yes or no. And what I've done in this episode is to give you some markers, some signs, some guidelines to help you identify the kinds of businesses that are likely going to be a waste of your time, a waste of your resources, right? So, and then I went ahead to say that, you know, it's not as if I just have any bad feelings towards these businesses. There are actually three things I'm looking for in a business. I want control, flexibility, and I want freedom. If I don't get that, I'm not going to enjoy that business and I don't want to be involved. The second thing I'm looking for is leverage. I want to make more than I put in. That's the whole idea of business. If I'm not making more than I put in, then why am I involved? It's just another job in disguise. And then the third thing I talked about, which unfortunately gets ignored often, is pride and peace of mind. I don't think that any business, no matter how much money it makes, is worth my peace of mind. I want to sleep with my two eyes closed. I don't want to walk around looking over my shoulder. I don't want to be scared of law enforcement, right? So these are the three reasons why. And then I went ahead to explain to you each of the six businesses that I hope I never get to get involved with in my life, except the conditions that I mentioned are fulfilled. And the six types of businesses I talked about, the first I talked about commodity businesses, and then I talked about single customer businesses, and then I talked about illegal businesses, and then I talked about single location dependent businesses. That's a business that depends wholly on a single location. And then I talked about time for money businesses, low price time for money businesses, that if you're going to give out your time, if you're going to sell your time, you have to make sure you can charge as much as is possible because your time is your most limited resource. We can always get more money. We can always get more anything, but we can't get more time. So if you're going to spend your time or give out your time, it should be at a premium. And then I talked about a treadmill business. A treadmill business is no work, no chow. I don't want a no work, no chow. Because what it means is that I cannot fall sick. I cannot take time off to enjoy myself or hang out with my family. I can't take time off to travel, even for important family things. Because if I don't work, I don't chow. I don't want that kind of business. Because remember what I said, even if you win a rat race, you are still a rat. So the goal is not to win the race. Because like I said, if you win the race, you still be a rat. The goal is don't get involved in the race. Because only rats run that race. So I don't want to be involved in that race because I don't see myself as a rat. I don't consider myself a rat. So I'm not interested in winning a rat race. No matter how much spectacle it has been built around that race, no matter what the prize is, no matter what the rewards are, I don't want to run that kind of race. Because even if I win, I'm still a rat. So at this point in the episode, let's talk about our partners, Quezza. Quezza, Kuueza, is doing amazing things for small and mid-sized businesses on the African continent. If you're trying to export, you're trying to explore new markets. And this is particularly relevant to this episode. If you are location dependent in your business just sells to customers in one location, one city, one town, one village, one country. Quezza provides the opportunity for you to explore the international market. You can get customers in the US, in Europe, in other African countries. So this helps to diversify your stream of income for your business so that if something happens to your customers in your local country, you also have an international audience that you're selling to, which is very important. Another interesting thing is that exporting to foreign markets opens the door for you to be able to charge more. Because the moment you're charging in a foreign currency, either US dollars, euros, or UK pounds, you may be able to charge more for your products and services. So I need you to, you know, pay attention to what Quezza is doing. If you sell products currently, I need you to visit your app store or the Play Store and download the Quezza seller app. There are actually two apps for Quezza. There's one for merchants, people who want to sell their products. That's the Quezza seller. Remember, Quezza is Kuueza. And then the second app is for people who want to buy on the Quezza platform. If you want to explore the variety of products that are available on Quezza, you can check it out at the Play Store or the App Store. The name of the app is Quezza User. So if you want to buy, you download the Quezza User. If you want to sell, download the Quezza Seller. So at this point in the episode, there are four things I need you to consider. The first is to join the Insiders Program, right? This episode you just listened to, I cannot tell you how many people who are now clients, either present or previous clients, that I have saved from getting involved in this kind of business. Because I work in I have a very interesting job. And my job is about listening to problems and listening to ideas, listening to opportunities. I hardly get excited by ideas these days because I've heard a lot of them. So sometimes when people show up and they're very excited about their ideas, they're very excited about the opportunity, they think they're going to make a lot of money, they think they're going to become millionaires, I am the person who gives them a reality check. Because I tell them, you know, this business may sound exciting, but the truth is, it's actually a commodity business. And this is why. And these are the consequences. And this is why you shouldn't get involved now. Or if you're going to get involved, these are the things you have to do right now so you can solidify your position. You can enhance your competitive advantage. You can start differentiating yourself now. Or these are the relationships you need to build because you need to defend your position. So that's exactly the value of being an insider. You can work directly with me. And the interesting part is I'm not just the only insider. There are other insiders from different countries within and outside of Africa who are building different kinds of businesses. Imagine the range of perspectives you can get. So there's being an insider comes with the opportunity to network. You can meet other interesting entrepreneurs who are doing things in your industry or in other industries. We've had people who have found partnerships, people who have closed deals, people who got introduced to, you know, interesting partners. So the insiders is a community you need to consider if you're very serious about building a business and you don't want to be the only person who's driving all the way, right? Some people tend to think that entrepreneurship is an individualistic sport. I beg to disagree, right? The more the merrier. The more experiences you have, the more difficulty and problems and heartaches you can save yourself. So to learn more about the insiders, very simple. Head over to smallstarter.com/insiders. Again, it is smallstarter.com/insiders. The second thing I need you to do is to tell your friends about this podcast. If you haven't told anybody about this podcast, and this is not the first episode you're listening to, then it's unfair. Because here's what's going on. All this information you're getting on the podcast is free, right? You're getting this kind of solid quality information for free. And all I'm asking is that you tell somebody else about it, right? What's the point of keeping it all to yourself? Is it like some secret weapon or you don't want other people to know? Guess what? If you're not going to spread it, other people will spread it. But the reason I'm calling you out is that I actually expect that if you're getting this for free, why don't you just pay it forward and, you know, pass it on? Tweet about the Small Starter Business Podcast. Say something about it on Facebook, on Instagram. Ask people to go Google Small Starter Business Podcast. We're number one on Google for that term, Small Starter Business Podcast. And they can listen to dozens of previous episodes. We've touched everything from sales to how to raise money, how to hire the right people, startup strategy, branding, how to choose a solid name for your business, all sorts of things that the average entrepreneur would have thought about before. So all I'm just doing is, you know, giving voice to some of those things, right? And then the third thing I want you to consider is to leave us a 5-star review. Now, it's important for two reasons. The first one is, it's more or less a version of giving me a pat on the back and saying, you know, well done, John Paul. I like what you're doing. A 5-star review is a good way to say thank you. The second reason, which is actually very important, is that 5-star reviews enhance the ranking of the podcast on the platforms. You might be listening to this on one of those platforms. It could be Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Deezer or Stitcher or Spotify. 5-star reviews give us a better standing so that new people can find us on those directories. So it wouldn't take you much to find the best way to leave us a 5-star review. Head over to smallstarter.com/review, smallstarter.com/review, and it's going to tell you the best way to leave us a review. And then the other thing I want to mention is, you know, why just listen to my podcast? I'm available on social media. I share stuff usually on a daily basis or when I have something really quality to share. On LinkedIn, I have about 800,000 followers. That's almost 1 million. So it must be that I'm doing something right. So I'm quite active on LinkedIn. I share posts on a daily basis. And these are usually quality stuff about things that's happening in the world of entrepreneurship. Very valuable stuff you can learn from. The other place where I'm very active is on Facebook. So we have the Small Starter Business Club on Facebook, right? So you can search for Small Starter Business Club on Facebook. I think we're about, 2,000 plus people. So that's where we also share stuff. You can, don't spam. It's not a place for you to just come market and stuff like that. But it's a place you need to belong to if you want to follow my work or interesting things that I've found. You know, that's all. I only share quality stuff. So if it's not quality, I'm not going to share it. So I just thought I should mention that. So LinkedIn, search for me, John Paul Iwoha. John Paul Iwoha. My surname is Iwoha on LinkedIn. And then on Facebook, search for the Small Starter Business Club on Facebook. So I want to thank you very much for listening to this episode. And the interesting thing about this podcast is the more you listen, gradually, the more you grow. And you start to encounter some very strange situations. For example, you're talking to somebody and then you say something and then they look at you somehow. They're like, how could you possibly know that? And then you think about it and you're like, I don't know how I know it, but I know it. Guess what? It's from all these things you're listening to. So you might be listening to this while you're taking a run, while you're driving a car, while you're on your commute to work or back from work, or while you're at the gym, or you're doing something in your kitchen or somewhere in your house, and then you're just listening to this. You're feeding your mind. And that's how it works. You're feeding your mind. You're feeding your mind. You're cultivating. You're watering your seed. You're watering your seed. Guess what? Someday it's going to pay off. You're going to become a better manager of people and resources. You're going to become a better convincer. People will love the way you think through issues, especially business issues. And that's because of the things you're listening to. So I want to encourage you to continue to listen to the podcast. I'm going to continue discussing interesting stuff that would keep adding value. And I'm hoping that in some rare occasion, you might be one of those listeners I get to meet face-to-face someday, right? So until the very next episode, I wish you all the very best. Stay safe. Stay positive. It doesn't matter what you're going through. It's a phase. As long as you're still alive, you're still in the fight. I look forward to talking to you again in the next episode. Cheers. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.